Welcome to the More Perfect Union, the podcast that offers real debate without the hate. I'm Kevin Kelton, and tonight I'm joined by Greg Matusak and Rebecca Kushmider. DJ McGuire is off this week. And gang, well, this was one of the first weeks where I could say it was actually a slow news week this week.
It was. After all the Kavanaugh and after everything else, we've had hurricanes and we've had all sorts of, this was a relatively slow news week. And in any other presidency, this would be crazy. But this was pretty slow, right?
Yeah. And you know what? I'm not sure that's a good thing. No. I have a very bad feeling about this.
When we can't see Trump's hands, I worry about what he's doing with them.
Exactly. So we are now T-minus 3 weeks to the midterms. Everybody who's listening to this is politically astute enough to know that the polls are tightening. The Senate is lost to the Democrats. The Democrats are not going to take control of the Senate.
Seriously?
The question now is, how many seats will they lose in the Senate? And the House, which looked like a lock maybe 4 weeks ago or 5 weeks ago, may indeed still be up for grabs.
All right, and, let's stop there first. I don't think the Senate is over. Okay, I am the crowded House here. Don't dream it's over. Hey now. Thank you for those. Those 80s references. First of all, we've got 3 weeks. Okay, anything can happen within those 3 weeks. Indiana, Texas, and what was the other one that we really needed?
Arizona.
Well, we need Nevada. You're talking about the Senate. We need Arizona. We need Nevada. We need Missouri. We need West Virginia.
I think Claire's
West Virginia.
Safe in Missouri.
We're going to win. There's no way we're not going to win West Virginia.
What did you say about Claire McCaskill in Missouri?
I think Claire's going to be okay.
Well, she may be, but guys, we're defending 10 seats.
Oh, yeah, no, the map is terrible for us. If we lose, it won't be because of turnout issues in the Senate. It'll be because the map sucks.
Right.
And Heidi Heitkamp showed a spine.
It's possible. We just can't give up everything at this point. I'm saying it's still
possible. No one's
possible.
Giving up. I'm just saying that. No, the Senate is lost, Greg.
No, it's not.
Well, until the election, it's not lost. But if you look at the polls, you've got Beto is down 9 points in Texas. Dean Heller is pulling ahead in Nevada. McCaskill is on the ropes. Robert Menendez is on the ropes in New Jersey.
Yeah, we're leading in Indiana.
We're leading in Arizona.
We're going to lose Heidi Heitkamp's seat.
We're not leading in Arizona.
You're looking at old polls, Rebecca. What's her name?
Cinema.
Cinema is not leading anymore.
I refuse to accept defeat with Cinema until she accepts it. I am with Kyrsten Sinema all the way. But none of us are Charlie Cook. And, you know, and like the math map is like, you know, we could debate this all night, and we probably would if we were given the opportunity. But, you know, we turnout is still an issue for the House. We got to get butts out the door. Like, that's the wrong metaphor. You don't want butts out the door. You want feet out the door. You want voters out the door.
Let's talk about this for a second. Okay. Every election that's ever happened in our lifetime, and probably going back 200 years, they always said, this is the most important election of our lifetime. And in some presidential elections, that's been true, maybe not so much in midterms. This midterm may be the most important set of midterms in contemporary American history, because I don't know whether people understand it. I've been, you know, speaking about this on almost every podcast for the last 6 months, but this is the difference between Donald Trump being a lame duck president for the next 2 years and maybe facing impeachment versus Donald Trump owning both houses or both chambers of Congress and the Supreme Court for 2 solid years and very likely getting reelected. I can't express the difference in America between 24 Democratic House seats won on November 6th and 22 Democratic House seats won. It is a vastly different country.
And to give you some reassurance, Kevin, there is a new poll out that I saw reported in the Post this morning. Certainty to vote is up 32 points among women younger than 40 compared with 2014. Among men and women ages 18 to 29, it's risen 17 points. People know that this is a really important election and they intend to get out. And that is an optimistic sign that people are willing to get engaged and do what it takes.
Yeah, and that's a great poll for us. However, there are, you know, look, the data is mixed. I saw a poll this week that said only 32% of voters under 30 plan to vote. That's down from about 60% 2 months back. So again, you could look at any one data point and find an argument. The data is mixed. The election is not over. I'm not here claiming defeat. I'm just saying we have to push turnout. We're going to be talking about that at the end of the show, too. But every person,
I feel like we could talk about
this,
it in every segment of the show. That could be like the most boring talking point that we discuss for the next 4 weeks. Like, hey, voter turnout, let's do it. Turn it out, baby.
Let me ask you guys this. Have you started getting texts to your phones about the election?
Yes, I have.
I have. And I will tell you, frankly, they're annoying. You know, you get them when you're driving. You get them when you're doing other stuff. They flood your text box. I actually stop the ones for the people that I know I'm going to vote for. I send them a nice text message saying, hey, you've got my vote. Now please stop with the texts. But everybody, you know, you're going to be getting these. It's going to become more and more intense. Yeah. They have your email. They have your phone number. And you're going to be getting contacted by a lot of campaigns in the next 3 weeks. If it's a campaign you don't want to hear from, text back STOP in big letters, in capital letters. If it's a campaign that you plan to vote for and you don't need to be reminded because you know you're going to vote, text back STOP.
But you know what? The thing you really need to do is put the reminder in your phone for when early voting begins, and you need to, you know, calendar election day and set reminders for yourself.
Yes.
Don't let this slide. Don't keep thinking, oh, yeah, it's some other time. Right. Get it in your Google calendar right this second.
That's
just
right.
Do it November 6th.
Right. That's right.
Read the propositions when the thing comes to your home. You're not going to read it the moment that you empty your mailbox, but don't throw it in a pile. Make sure that you read through the booklet. Circle just a couple that are important to you. If you don't have the patience to read all the propositions and do all the analysis, you know what? If you don't want to vote for any of the propositions, that's okay. Just go to the ballot, whether you're going to do it by mail, whether you're going to do it in person, and just vote for the people with a D after their name.
You know what I did a while ago? I created a Facebook event for Election Day, and I, you know, invited pretty much everyone on my friends list, except for people who would be insulted that I would do such a thing because they're such regular voters anyway. And I just keep like adding little comments and stuff on it, so it pops up in people's feed, like, "Hey, Rebecca added a post on the Election Day," just to keep tickling everyone's memory.
So Kevin, did we change your mind? Are you like, it's not over? It's not over. We are going to win the Senate now. Do you feel energized now?
No, well, you haven't. I know with 100% certainty we're not going to win the Senate.
Here we go. It's not over. Did we say it was over when the
Germans
bombed Pearl Harbor? There we go.
Yeah, we need John Belushi to come campaign for us. Wouldn't that be something?
Right. I'm telling you, that's the best I can do for you. If that doesn't work,
if quoting Animal House doesn't save democracy, nothing will.
Nothing will. Come on. I'm on a roll here.
He's on a roll here.
Yeah.
Well, you know, speaking of Animal House and the mob scene in the last act of Animal House reminds me of the Democrats now, because the Democrats have turned into mobs, haven't they?
An angry mob.
Yeah. Taking this country away from us good Americans.
And I'm upset that the angry mobs have been going on, because I missed the whole radical leftist text message about the angry mobs, speaking of text messages that I'm not getting, because like I would have been there for that. Like, I'm down to be part of an angry mob.
Okay. First of all, see, as the only person here who actually watches Fox News, you guys haven't seen this, so I assume you don't know what this Democratic mob thing is. This entire week, Fox News has been running this, we'll use the word motif. That's the word for it.
With a little like French accent over it somewhere. Motif.
Yes, motif.
Escargot.
Where all their stories have been like, oh, the uncivility, the angriness. Where has this come from? Where previously we were snowflakes, but now we're this angry mob. Where has the genteelness of the good old days? You know, now we're just crazed you know, animals.
In their eyes.
Right.
What you're saying.
Yeah. Interesting. Right. Where, you know, and they keep showing footage of, like, Eric Holder saying things like, you know, when they go low, we kick them. Not showing the full footage of that video where he goes, no, that's a metaphor. We don't actually do anything illegal, and we don't actually kick people, and I don't want you to do anything. It's just
because
the
former attorney general is really a radical, you know, organizer of mobs. Yeah.
But the whole point is that they've been painting us as these crazy people who shout at, you know, like, they're like, you know, I can't even go out to dinner now because who knows if I wear a red hat, you know, people are going to see me for my views in America, which is kind of ridiculous. Well, no, it's ridiculous.
They painted as a civil war with General Maxine Waters on a horse, you know, with a sword over her head.
Mm-hmm. Hey, can we talk about that Maxine Waters thing? Real
what
quick.
Happened with her now?
They're running a sound clip of hers.
Yeah.
That she said, like, in August or June or July, something about get in their face. This was after the Red Hen thing. She said something about we need to go out and get in their faces. Maxine Waters is not elderly, but a lady of mature years. She's been in the Congress for decades. She is the most innocuous person in the world, and they're painting her as Abby Hoffman or Angela Davis. It's unbelievable.
Well, not only that, but she is not the head of the Democratic Party either.
She's not even the head of the Congressional Black Caucus. She is just a rank and file member of Congress. She's not a ranking member on anything.
Well, their argument is that she'll become she could become a committee chairperson.
Oh, please, anyone could become a committee chairperson if they've been in the House of Representatives long enough. She's probably gonna become a chairperson of a subcommittee if we take the majority. That's how it works. Right. It doesn't make her dangerous. It means she's been there a long time. Those are awarded on seniority.
I don't think we're making our point clear to the listeners. The point is that the Republicans are trying to paint Democrats as radical, violent extremists because it's ginning up their base.
Yeah, because, well, again, it's all they've got.
You know, it's like saying that Chuck Schumer is going to have a knife fight with someone, you know, if the Democrats take the Senate, which they're not going to do.
Ugh.
There hasn't been a knife fight in the Senate in many years, and it definitely wasn't instigated.
But my point, I just recently had this conversation, is if you want more civility, if you want this to be a nicer government, things have to go from the top down. If you have a boss in an office who lets F-bomb flies all the time, you're going to have an office where everyone lets F-bombs fly. But if you have a boss who never curses and says the words like, golly gee, no one curses. So right now we have a boss named D. Trump, and he is not a very civil person. And so you've got a not a very civil office. So,
well, let's give an example. What this thing in Queens the other day with the Proud Boys?
Oh yeah, sure.
Where they tried to make it like Antifa was getting out of control, but it was actually the opposite. What happened there, Greg?
So Fox News actually showed this all day.
Well, tell us what happened.
So there was a GOP group. There was a at the GOP.
It was a Republican club, which is more like a social thing than an actual political thing.
Which
and a group called the Proud Boys was there.
Well, no, a guy was speaking. A guy who's like a white
Gavin McInnes.
But they represent a group called the Proud Boys, right?
Yes.
Right, he's part of it, and he was speaking, and so people showed up to protest him speaking, and they were standing outside when he and his entourage exited the building, and so they fought the protesters.
Right.
But not just fought them, like chased them down and beat the shit out of them.
Again, I think you're not being clear. The Republicans came out of the building, these Proud Boys and their sycophants, saw some peaceful protesters, and they attacked the peaceful protesters.
Yes.
And Fox ran it and claimed that the Democratic protesters were the ones that created the violence.
Right.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, there's video of it. And when Fox showed the video, they flipped it and said, look, here are the protesters attacking these nice Republicans who are just trying to, you know, just be there. But they flipped the names.
It was actually, there was a guy with a sword or something, and he was a Republican, he was a conservative, trying to flail his sword at peaceful protesters, and Fox actually had the audacity to say it was the Democrat from Antifa who was wielding the sword.
Right, and that was right. Gavin McInnes himself.
Why the hell did he have a sword? Like, who carries a sword to a speaking engagement? Who What's knows? Wrong with him?
Later on, he had put out the video himself, and they show him running down individual protesters. Like, oh, quick, there's one.
Running after them, yeah.
Yeah, and there were like 10 or 12 of these guys.
Yeah, and they were throwing a... It was a 12 on 1. They threw this guy to the ground and were kicking him on the cement.
Yeah,
and then
it was
just
brutal.
Walked away, leaving him on the ground there. This wasn't a fist fight, and this wasn't an equal fight in any way. It was the Proud Boys beating up a protester.
This goes back to the Nixon in 1968, 69, 70. They would go to peaceful Vietnam protests. They would bring out the National Guard, or they would bring out the state militia. They would, you know, incite violence, get it on videotape, get it on the news, and then claim that, you know, we have to do something to restore law and order in this country. It's the same strategy they used in the South. Bull Connor would do this to make the white folks turn against the angry mobs of black people. But this is what they would do. They would create violence, and then they would claim it was the other side that started it to appeal to the law and order white folks. This is what's happening in our country right now. And if they win with this tactic, folks, watch out for your rights, because they will only amplify this tactic going forward into 2020.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's scary as hell.
Okay, let's talk about Kanye West, because he... Now, there's a statesman. Why can't we have more people like Kanye West in this country? People who are certifiably insane.
They broke the mold when they made Kanye West. And
speaking
thank
of Nixon.
For it.
Yeah. Tell us about the parallels there, Greg.
So if you guys don't know the story about Nixon and Elvis. So back in like, what was it, like 72, something like that. Where Elvis decides he wants to go to the White House. Why? Because he thinks he can be an undercover agent, and he go and the White House is like, is this for real? And he's like, yeah. So
for the White House, he wanted to be an undercover agent, help the FBI,
right,
to keep law and order for the Nixon administration.
And they had no idea, but he was the most famous person in the world. So he shows up, and he's like, you gotta give me a badge, you gotta let me in. And he talks to Nixon for like much longer than he should have, and just crazy ass talk. And it's one of the most requested pictures in the world of Nixon and Elvis in his cape. And in the end, they're like, Nixon, you can't give him an actual badge because
they give him like a badge from a cereal box.
No, they actually do give him a badge though, because he won't leave without him, but it's like encased in like glass. Like, it's like, oh, this is a ceremonial badge. It's it means you're like on Nixon's family crew, blah, blah, blah. Which he then took back to Memphis, and his Memphis mafia would then pull people over and be like, we saw you speeding. You're a bad person. You can tell. Once again, pretty funny stuff. This puts that all to shame, because although we don't know if Kanye got a decoder ring or whatever, Kanye goes in there with Jim Brown, who's awesome and has this incredible pedigree of civil rights, acting, athletics, and he's
a great former NFL running back.
He's sitting there through the whole thing with his like eyes like, I can't believe I'm here. Well, Kanye just talks about, you know,
himself. Like, he talked about himself.
Well, about how slavery wasn't real, about how alternate dimensions, about, you know, fossil fuels, keeping the black man down, fathers, and how about his mother, and about
how the hat is like a super cape.
Oh, about
right.
How he flew
Where is
there?
The yeah, and the phrase "I'm with her" didn't make him feel good.
It was unbelievable. And Trump is like, yeah.
No, Nixon knew Elvis was on drugs and a mask. Trump does not realize the same about Kanye.
Oh, I disagree.
You think Trump knows Kanye's off his rocker?
I think Trump realized it's not that Kanye's on drugs. I think
he's off his drugs,
off his medication.
Off his meds. Yeah.
And there's not, you know, and this is where
he said he was off his meds.
Pete Davidson said something on Saturday Night Live last week about this. Look, there's no shame in mental illness, and I, you know, true dat, but he needs to get back on his medication, and that's for real. I defend Kanye all the time about his music. I think Yeezus is incredible, The Graduate, 2003, incredible music, but I honestly believe he is mentally ill when he says some of this stuff, and I feel bad.
But you know, to be fair, there are other celebrities who are getting involved in politics. Taylor Swift comes to mind. She endorsed Phil Bredesen in Tennessee.
And
I'm sure that none of us here are going to call her crazy. So why is it okay for Taylor Swift to make her political points in the public realm, but not Kanye West?
Well, you know, it is okay for Kanye to make his political points in the political realm. The problem is he was ranting nonsense. Taylor Swift came out with a cogent statement saying, I support Phil Bredesen because Marsha Blackburn is a homophobe. And that's what she said. It was coherent. It made sense. Kanye went off on a rambling rant and was suggesting we repeal the 13th Amendment in the Oval Office. Then he showed up at the Apple Store, asked if he could stand on a table and make a keynote speech. You know, he was not behaving like a normal person.
I don't know. I do that about every other week.
Right, that's Kevin. True. And nobody.
And I love your keynotes. I love your keynotes. They're awesome.
Actually, it's DJ who does that. But
that's why he's not here tonight.
He had a booking at an Apple Store.
Yeah, he's somewhere in the Tidewater area, standing on a table at the Apple Store. He actually probably got it wrong, and he's at the Verizon store because he doesn't want to be like Kanye. But you know, this is America. We all have a right to put our soapbox out wherever we want to and say whatever we want. Some people sound intelligent and pulled together when they say it, and some people sound like they're batshit crazy. And Kanye has gone into batshit crazy territory. There are times where Kanye said things that make a whole hell of a lot of sense. This is not one of those times.
Yeah, and for the record, I have never said anything bad about Kanye supporting Trump. That's his bag. And I've always said, you know, if you are a celebrity, you have a, what's the word I'm looking for?
A table at the Apple store?
A soapbox. You have a megaphone.
Soapbox. Thank you. Or a table at the Apple store, because I think tables at the Apple stores are taller.
Right. Yeah, no, I mean, this is the modern age. The table at the Apple store is the new soapbox.
Is the new soapbox. I love that. I'm going to start using that and see if anyone gets that reference. But you have a table at the Apple store. So you get to a platform. That's the word. You have a platform to use this. And if you use it for good, awesome. If you use it for bad, if you want to say, hey, I think Jill Stein or Ralph Nader, man, I'll be a little disappointed, but that's your bag, you know? Cool. We've never said anything about Kanye West as far as his choice. It's just, wow. 13th Amendment?
And, you know, but this is one of those things that, and I meant to write about it this week, but the week got away from me. This is starfucker politics. This is, you know, the reason Kanye was invited to the Oval Office is because Trump really loves celebrity. The reason people are flipping out that Taylor Swift made an endorsement is because everybody is looking for Moses to lead them out of the desert. We are waiting for some messianic figure to change our politics. And speaking as a Democrat, as somebody who's worked in advocacy and grassroots, I'm telling you, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. It didn't happen with Obama. It happened with the grid system of grassroots mobilization that Obama's campaign staff put into play. And Taylor Swift isn't going to save us. Kanye West isn't going to save us. Donald Trump, Mr. Host of The Apprentice, isn't going to save us. It's all about us doing the work to make the changes happen. We can't be looking for this stuff to happen from the top down.
That sounds like a lot of work.
But while we're talking about celebrities, you know, I wanted to point out that on last night's SNL, they did another Trump-Kanye cold opening. I think this is the first appearance of the Trump portrayal of this season.
Well, the season's only like 3 weeks old, so yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, I want to jump in and say we were talking a little bit before we started taping tonight about portrayals, you know, whether it's actual presidents or presidential candidates who have appeared on SNL or impressions of presidents and presidential candidates on SNL. I have a great fear, and this goes back to my overall fear about what's coming in the midterms and possibly in 2020, that in the first year of SNL following the Trump ascent to the presidency, there was a very sharp point to the parodies that they were doing. They were about why he was not fit to be president. We've now morphed that Alec Baldwin impression into something else. He's become the lovable version of Trump. He's become the kind of funny, oh yeah, that's our president, he has his faults, but we still love him version. And that is really dangerous. It worked for George Bush. When Richard Nixon, we were talking about this, went on Laughing and said, sock it to me, people felt that humanized him in 1968 and certainly didn't hurt his election chances that year. It probably earned him a few hundred thousand votes. There is something going on in America now that I'm feeling. We all watch a lot of cable news. Greg, you watch a little bit more Fox than I do. Maybe I'm watching a little bit more MSNBC than is healthy for me. Maybe that's that's the drug that I need to cut down on.
Got to get your Rachel Maddow fix in there, and
I do.
Chris Hayes. No, I feel you. I'm a Maddow addict.
But I'm feeling something. I'm feeling that Trump has been normalized. This Brett Kavanaugh thing was more than just losing or filling a seat with a conservative justice. Something clicked. Something shifted in this country with that fight. And I think Trump has turned the tables on the Democrats, on the news media, and on the country. And I see us falling into a pattern now where people just accept that he's president. For the first 2 years, we weren't ready to accept it. And I don't know what's going to happen now when Robert Mueller finishes his investigation, issues a report that obviously is going to have some damning information in it, whether the country is going to be able to act on that or whether Trump is just going to be able to sidestep it and plow towards 2020. And God forbid, if he comes out of this unscathed with the entire Republican Party behind him saying, my God, he truly is a political genius. Not only did he defeat Hillary Clinton, who seemed to be a lock for the presidency, he helped us ward off the blue wave, the supposed blue wave. And they go into 2020 and we're arguing over whether it should be Biden or Sanders or Harris, and Democrats are eating each other alive, as we tend to do in the primaries.
We do.
Guys, we could be looking at an 8-year presidency.
Well, not to quote DJ McGuire, but he's been saying all along that the only thing that's going to un-Trump America is the voters.
At the ballot box.
At Absolutely. The ballot box. The only way to get rid of him is through a legitimate election. And I have agreed
but
with
it
DJ.
It starts in the midterms.
It starts in the midterms because that slows the progress of his agenda. He needs a foil. He needs one of the other arms of government to be his check, to be his balance. And the House of Representatives is very good at doing that.
And the Senate.
And also the Senate. But,
and the
you know,
Senate. I don't
I
care.
Know more about the House of Representatives than I do about the Senate. So
I don't care what Kevin says.
Okay. You know what? I'm revising it. I think we come out of this with 60 seats in the Senate.
That's
yeah,
right.
Maybe
that's
61.
More like it, Kevin. Yeah,
61. 61, just in case somebody's sick that
you know
day.
What? We
we'll
come
still
out
have a super
with 80 seats in the Senate. Let's get ambitious. I don't think we're 80 seats up. It's a
let's go crazy. Let's go nuts.
The More Perfect Union. Real debate with a lot more alcohol.
By the way, nobody asked where I was last week.
Yeah, where were you last week, Kevin?
Yeah, where was I, Greg? I was, what did you say on the show?
I said leading... you were protesting.
I was protesting.
You were I assume you were protesting.
He was part of an angry left-wing mob.
Angry left-wing mob. I sure was. No, I actually went to a big family reunion of my girlfriend Jessica's in Boston. Her mom turned 80.
Oh,
and so we
talk.
Went there
that's lovely.
For her mom's birthday and came out of the party somehow engaged to be married.
Oh!
Mazel tov!
Congratulations!
We're
having a more perfect union.
So all our listeners are invited, I assume.
All the listeners are invited. I remember when the Beatles were on the Ed Sullivan Show for the second time in 1964. Yes, I'm that old. I remember when they would chyron the names of the Beatles because they were still so new that people didn't know which one was which.
My God, sure. can you imagine?
And they had a close-up of John playing the guitar, and it said John, and underneath it said, sorry, girls, he's married. And, of course, hearts were broken all across America that night. I have a feeling the same thing is happening right now.
Yeah, I think...
Kevin's off the market, and a lot of our listeners are weeping in their pillows right now.
The MP universe, as I call it.
I think the picture tonight on the MPU thing should be just a picture of you, and should be, sorry, ladies, he's taken.
He's taken.
Yeah. That should be the thing. Sorry.
And also boys, because this is 2018. We don't know what our fans are into.
That's true.
That's true. That's true.
Sorry, everybody.
So that was some upbeat news this week that I just thought I would share with our audience.
We've all actually been sitting on this for a week. We knew about it, and we're just delighted, Kevin.
Yeah, yeah. Let me just say this:
both you and Jess and your families.
Yeah, a week. Sure.
Okay, fine. Just because Kevin likes you best, Greg.
Oh yes, people don't know there was only 3 people in the world. I told about this before it happened. Well, I told all the jewelers because I went to like 15 different, you know, ring shops because I'm a crazy shopper.
Really?
But aside from all of them, there's only 3 people in the world that knew about this ahead of time. My 2 kids, who I told because I figured that they would disown me if I didn't tell them ahead of time. And for some reason, I told Greg.
But you know what? We all use Greg for different purposes in our lives. Like, he's your confidant and advisor on romance. He helped me purchase a saxophone for my son this week. So
that's right.
Greg is really a jack of all trades, and we could not do this. And he also edits the show sometimes.
Sometimes.
He makes the images. He creates our rundowns. Like, this is
poorly.
Greg appreciation moment right here on MPU.
Poorly.
He finds tables at Apple stores for DJ to stand
yes!
on.
Oh, my goodness. It's what I do's. It's what I do's.
Okay, so back to politics. So that was just a brief respite from.
It's going to be edited out, I'm sure.
No, it's not actually.
Leave it in. It's good stuff. This is, you know, life still goes on, guys. Politics are not actually eating our brains. It's not a parasite.
But now I'm going to bring up politics again. So because it's on a rundown, we have to talk about it. So in Georgia, they have this really hot governor's race going on right now. Stacey Abrams is the GOP. Excuse me. Stacey Abrams is the Democratic candidate for governor.
She is not the GOP candidate.
No.
She's a gentleman,
people.
And I use that word loosely, named Brian Kemp is the GOP candidate for governor. He is currently, I believe, the Secretary of State.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
In Georgia.
Which means he's the chief election official for the state of Georgia.
The chief election official. So while he is running, actively running for governor of Georgia, he has been purging the voter rolls of Georgia to the tune of 53,000 people just this year. And he's used some technicality in Georgia law about their names not exactly matching their registration info or something like that.
Right. So, like, in Ohio, we purge the voter laws about every 4 to 8 years.
Voter rolls,
excuse me. And it can be, like, you know, if you die or if you don't return, if you move, things like that. And
those are good reasons to remove someone from the voter
reasons.
Rolls.
Yes, those are valid and legal reasons to remove someone from the rolls.
And you'll hear about this, like, Ohio purges the voter rolls of, you know, 20,000 people. And you'll always hear someone get upset, but then you'll realize a lot of people died or a lot of people moved out.
Yeah, I was going to say 15,000 of those people are, in fact, deceased.
Right.
And the rest graduated and left the state.
Not so uncommon. But this is called an exact match purge. And the worst part about this, and I'm going to say the shittiest part about this, is that he did it on his own because he said, well, I'm, you know, big mix swinging dick Secretary of State, that he did it on his own thinking he could. He got sued and he got shut down on it, right?
He lost the lawsuit and he's still doing it. He's ignoring the court order.
No, the state legislature got
the
involved
state
somehow, but
legislature.
I don't remember how.
So he got someone to write a law saying we should have an exact match law. So in other words, like, my name is Greg, obviously, but if I registered as Gregory, okay, but for some reason I showed up and said, hey, my name is Greg, but my thing said Gregory, I'd be bounced.
Or if you got married, if a woman got married, changed
precisely.
Her name.
Yeah, right? And or if like your handwriting's messy and the hyphen doesn't show up or whatever. And so what has happened is people who have applied for voter registration, their applications are sitting in a drawer because they don't exactly match whatever previous records they're being cross-referenced against. And they're not alerting these people that they need to fix their application.
Right.
They're just letting 53,000 voter registration applications languish. And part of the problem is that while the state is something like 30% African American, 70% of these languishing applications are African American. So there's a major racial disparity. Kevin and I were discussing this before the show. Rachel Maddow pointed out that ordinarily, a Secretary of State running for governor would recuse themselves or resign from their position as Secretary of State so they weren't overseeing the election that they were currently in. And Mr. Kemp has not done that. He is actively suppressing votes for an election in which he is running. It's really quite screwed up.
Yeah. And, you know, it's not just this year, by the way. This man has been on the job since, I think, 2012. Since 2012, he has purged from the voting rolls of Georgia 1.4 million voters. Now, think about that. Georgia only has a population of about 10 million people, and I would assume that only 7 to 8 million of them are voting age. So just think about it. He has purged about a quarter of the
yeah.
registered voters off the rolls in that state in 6 years.
And wow. Yeah, and without oversight. With no oversight. He is the top official to be doing this. And like, and I heard someone today saying, well, you know, Stacey Abrams really should have raised this sooner. I'm like, well, I'm sorry. Why is this too late to raise that? That's the complaint that they're saying. They're like, she should have talked about it sooner. I'm like, no. Someone should be talking about this.
Yes.
The timing doesn't matter.
It's Dianne Feinstein's fault, I'm sure.
Oh, I'm sure. It's Eric Holder's fault. It's angry Democratic mobs. But, you know, that's one of these arguments along with civility. Like, oh, now this is not the time to talk about this. Well, when the fuck is the time? When Kemp is elected governor and can do more of this very thing?
Right.
We have to raise these issues as they come up. It's been something that I've faced in the gun safety movement. Like, don't politicize this tragedy. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to have to.
If only we had a national court, like a, you know, a top court, like, I don't know, a supreme kind
a
of
supreme
a court. That would have the balls, even though there were three women on it, that had the balls to step in and do something in these situations. And not go, well, no, we're not going to hear it now. We'll hear it in 2019 after he's been elected.
Well, but here's the thing. They did hear a problem in, where's Heidi Heitkamp? North Dakota or South Dakota? One of the Dakotas. The Heitkamp Dakota. They upheld a law that you cannot register to vote if your ID or your address is a P.O. box, which is a problem for Native Americans who live on reservation lands because the U.S. Postal Service won't deliver there. So the only way to get U.S. mail is to have a P.O. box. So it becomes this vicious cycle. And the sheer arrogance of lawmakers saying that people whose history is indigenous to this continent are somehow ineligible from proving their residency in the state that their ancestors has lived on for thousands of years is mind-boggling to me. And so but fortunately there's a loophole in North Dakota that like you can actually register on site to vote. And so they're finding a way to create address verification at the polls. I only half read the article and I wish I'd gotten all the details, but there are activists working to sort of fight back against this. But it's, you know, there's African-American voter suppression in Georgia. There's Native American voter suppression in the Dakotas. It's Republicans doing it. If your vote wasn't so important, they wouldn't be trying to stop you. Go vote. They don't want you to. Piss them off.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
So for the record, though, the guy who's one of the our Secretary of State in Ohio is
Mike
running.
DeWine?
What?
Mike DeWine?
No. It's John Husted.
Oh, Secretary okay. of State. I'm sorry.
You're thinking Attorney General. He's running for lieutenant governor with Mike DeWine.
And,
and he hasn't stepped down. So he's not running for governor. He's running for lieutenant governor with that douchebag, Mike DeWine.
So, well, you know who's going to have to step down?
Who?
Mary Bono is going to have to step down from her job as Gymnastics USA. No, apparently she had something on her Twitter feed this week that got people up in arms. What was that one, Rebecca?
Oh, God. Okay, so back in September, when Colin Kaepernick was first announced as a Nike spokesperson.
Hells yeah, hells yeah.
Yeah, hi, Cap. Holla.
Holla.
I, you know what? I can't get away with
yeah,
holla,
we gotta stop
I?
Doing that. We gotta stop
yeah,
that.
Yeah, we really should not.
But
anyway, so she went on Twitter, as many, many Republicans did, and was like, ooh, I'm playing in a charity golf tournament today, but all I have is Nike golf shoes, so I've got a marker and I'm gonna block out the swoosh. You know, which, come on, that's so fucking stupid. Nike already has your money. And so that was on her Twitter feed. So she's named head of Gymnastics USA this week, or the interim.
Interim.
Head.
Let's be clear. Let's be clear.
Real interim.
Real interim. Interim.
An organization interim. That exists based on sponsorship by large organizations such as major sneaker manufacturers.
Right. But, well, exactly. Or just sports apparel manufacturers. And Simone Biles, the, you know, probably the most famous face of USA Gymnastics right now, gets on Twitter like, thanks, Mary Bono. We didn't need responsible leadership or sponsors. This is awesome. You're great. So I'm guessing that by like Tuesday, there's going to be a new interim head of USA Gymnastics, because the former representative who, you know, followed up her husband, Sonny, in Congress, is has already shit the bed on that one.
Now, she has deleted it. And she did.
Oh, well, that fixes everything. That she deleted her tweet.
She's like, it's a distraction. The post was a distraction from what I want to do. I'm like, what is it you want to do, Mary? Like, talk to me here.
Right. And she did the usual, I call it the Republican apology. Like, I'm really sorry that this this offended some people. What? Wait, what? What? How, so this is on me?
So we want to wrap this up. We want to put this all in a package because, again, there's 3 weeks left to the midterms. If you still haven't registered and your state allows you to register, do it this week. You can do it online. There are apps that let you register on your smartphone. If you're already registered, it's important that you vote, but that's a minimum requirement. You voting is the minimum amount that you need to do to be a good citizen. You have to help turn out your friends, your classmates, your relatives. I want each listener here to take responsibility to get at least two other people to commit to voting who maybe would not have voted if you hadn't talked to them. There's a great app that we've plugged on this show before called OutVote. Download it to your phone. It will use your contact list to send text messages to people to remind them to vote. And you get to decide who to send it to and who not to. If you have Republican relatives, like Greg does, just leave them off the list. We like Republicans. We love them.
I do. We want them to vote.
We just don't want them to vote on Election Day.
I'm changing their calendars, actually.
Yeah, you've got a different Facebook event that you've like for the couple days before.
And I'm like, but Conway Twitty singing. he's got a comeback tour, really?
Is he alive? Is Conway Twitty
no,
still
he's,
alive?
No, he's dead.
Well, I mean, and if you don't want to bug your friends and relatives, I've been using a great site called Postcards to Voters. You can select from a couple different campaigns that they're supporting, get addresses, literally just addresses, not names. So you're sending to a house, but not, you don't know who the person is. And you can write these postcards reminding folks what early voting dates are in their districts, you know, reminding them the names of the relevant candidates. It's so easy to do. You can do as few as 4 or 5 a day and just send these out. They give you templates you can print out for the postcards.
I got one of those postcards in the mail over the weekend.
Actually, Kevin, I just got an alert from them. They're now doing postcards for your girl, Katie Hill.
Yeah, I got one.
In California 25.
This weekend. I had no idea who wrote it. It was handwritten, so there you go.
Yep, no, and I've been doing it. I haven't handwritten this much stuff since I was taking notes in grad school.
Okay, so we're bumping up on a hard ending here, so we want to thank everybody for listening. Please follow us on Twitter at #MPUPodcast and on Facebook at facebook.com/moreperfectunionpodcast and share our link on your Facebook timeline so your friends can discover us as well. Okay, so use social media, tell people to vote.
Offer them rides, offer to babysit, offer to meet them at the polls with donuts. Do what you gotta do, folks.